651 1320 WILS. Let's talk about the logistics of what actually occurred yesterday in Manchester, how this attack occurred, and are we in danger here in places like East Lansing at Spartan Stadium? Kevin Malott with us, international security expert at erace.com. Kevin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, what do you guys do at Erace? I don't know if I've ever asked you that. What do you do at erace.com?
Well, we do a special event and meeting security, and we do executive protection, we do counterterrorism work, and we do intelligence gathering, investigations, all the high-end stuff of the good guy, bad guy world.
Kevin, anything about the attack from what you've seen that makes you think this could have been somehow stopped?
Well, you know, there's one thing that kind of puzzled me on a couple of the interviews. I saw several people interviewed that were there who said that when they came to the arena, they came through the subway system. And that subway system, I've actually been there before. You have stairs that come up from the subway station below, underground, right into the arena itself or into the actual building. Now, everybody thinks about any kind of basketball or hockey rink or any kind of stadium we go to that's indoor. You always go through an outside set of doors, and then there's like a big corridor that goes around the arena, which we'll call a foyer. And then there's other doors you go through to go actually into the arena or into the event area.
Mm-hmm.
So their guy said that they came up the stairs, and at that building, those stairs from the subway come up inside that foyer area. So you're actually already inside the arena building. And they said that, you know, they walked up there, no one patted them down or frisked them or did anything security-wise. And they basically just walked up, filled the ticket, and walked in.
Okay.
That's number one. Now, number two is that at the end of an event, and most people that are your listeners can think this through, when you go to leave an event, typically there's less security outside than when you came there to begin with. And so the emphasis is always stopping somebody from coming inside.
Right.
And it is very common. We have a uniform division that works, and we work at stadiums and facilities before. Like, so we do a lot of meeting event security. It is common at times for people to say, hey, we're about 80% over or whatever. Cut some of your guys loose.
Okay.
Now, that's always a cost-saving thing, okay?
So are we looking at procedural changes like what you're describing now where they won't be doing that in the future now?
Yeah. I mean, what I'm thinking about is a couple things. One, that we keep everybody on staff even past the end until everybody leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then two, how do you create a safe buffer outside? Because the obvious target here was for the guy to come into the foyer while large crowds of people were coming out,
mm-hmm.
and it would all be consolidated in that foyer trying to get to the exterior doors. And that gave him a lot of targets in a very close proximity area.
Tell me, Kevin, because I mean, we've got certainly here in East Lansing on Saturdays, huge crowds at Spartan Stadium. Are we as vulnerable as Manchester was yesterday?
Well, yeah, I think any time, Mike, you got a guy that's willing to die in the attack, and we know this when we do executive protection. If someone's willing to die in the attack, you have to have a perimeter line somewhere, right? So let's just say we move the security line, you know, half a block away from the stadium. Well, then everybody stacked up in line at the security checkpoint. And you get what they did in Paris, where they blew up the bomb at the soccer stadium in the security checkpoint, not on the inside, but actually where people were waiting to get, you know, to get in.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, there's a perimeter, there's a line, and the trick's going to be, you know, we're not going to stop them necessarily killing somebody if they're willing to die in the attack.
Right.
But we can limit the number of people they take with them.
That's something to do. Kevin Malott with us at erace.com. The lone wolf, is this something you think one 22-year-old can do, put together this kind of an IED? And go ahead.
No, you and I talked about this many times. I don't believe in the lone wolf concept. You know, I would say the only lone wolf in terrorism I ever knew was Ted Kaczynski, who was a Unabomber.
Yeah.
He operated strictly by himself. Everybody else has got someone who trained him, someone who showed him how to make the bomb, someone who showed him, you know, gave money or showed him, you know, who's that kind of target you want to hit.
Yeah.
There's always other people involved.
What does it take to really put together a bomb of this kind that would kill this many people?
Well, actually, it doesn't take a lot of talent. I mean, you got to get the explosive materials and stuff, but all they do is they make a basic explosive, and then they pack around it shrapnel, nails, you know, nuts and bolts, anything metallic that'll fly through the air and hit people. And when you go into a foyer that's packed with people, you're going to have damage, even if you don't have, you know, a really high-quality explosive device. You're still hurting people.
Okay, so do you suspect he built the bomb himself, likely, and just went in there and blew himself up on his own?
Well, no. I mean, the Inspire magazine, the Beat, they have their monthly magazines that teach the guys how to make bombs.
Okay.
You know, the two brothers that made the bomb in the Boston Marathon, the pressure cooker bombs, they learned that from the magazine, but they also traveled overseas. And you have to remember, almost all of these bad guys in the last couple of years have gone overseas.
Yeah.
This would not surprise me in the least if this guy had traveled overseas and traveled out of the UK.
Because I know his family is originally from Libya. I'm curious then, when we, apparently there are thousands of potential perpetrators they track regularly in the UK. What do we do with all these people, you think, that are potential problems?
Well, we're back to that civil liberties question, Mike. I mean, we have it in the US too, but we know for a fact that over 800 British citizens traveled to Syria to fight with ISIL. We know that at least 350 of them came back. That's what they know from tracking statistics.
Yeah.
Last year, they had 288 arrests in the UK related to terrorism. And, of course, here in the U.S., you know, our former FBI director said we have open cases in all 50 states.
Okay.
So they're everywhere, but you still got to remember, we don't want to give up our society and our civilization approach because we're so afraid of these guys, because then we become, you know, a less than good country.
So
you
wouldn't necessarily support just deporting someone that might be seriously considering an attack?
Well, I think there's a question that we need to get out with the court and the legislature and start thinking about in what situations are we willing to take, you know, a different action, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you this real quick, Mike. Imagine you and I are police or we're security officers and we're armed. And we're standing outside the Manchester Arena, and we see a guy walk up with a backpack, and he starts heading in right when the show's getting ready to end. And we say, hey, stop where you are, because there's no reason for anybody to be going in, let alone with a backpack that we wouldn't allow in before the show. We tell him to stop, and he doesn't stop. He keeps going. What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And if we shoot the guy to stop him, and he doesn't have a bomb in the backpack, you and I are going to jail. And if we don't shoot him and he's got a bomb in the backpack, lots of people are going to die.
Yeah.
So we may have to start thinking about in certain areas, certain procedures, rules and engagement changes to protect the public in a bigger picture. But
yeah,
that's a big conversation the public needs to have with their politicians and the judges and the legislature and all that. It's not so much for us on the street to figure that one out.
Now, otherwise, any likelihood this is going to be somehow slowed down or stop these kinds of attacks in your view?
No, I think they're going to pick up. You saw 50 Islamic countries meet the other day with our president. They're all looking at putting a squeeze on the bad guys. As that happens, the only way they're going to get funding is to carry out attacks. That's how they get additional funding. And for that to take place, they're going to hit us harder and harder. Now, that would be what happens in the final throes of their existence. But there's no other way to deal with it, because they're going to hit us one way or the other. One situation, we're driving the show and controlling it to the end. The other situation, they just keep doing it forever until they win.
I've got to ask, it's 30 seconds, but is there anything we can learning about radicalization, is that going to help us in any real way?
Well, it will. We need to stop the ideology. I mean, that's the big picture. We need to have our intelligence guys doing the best they can within the restrictions put upon them regarding gathering intel to stop them before it happens.
Yeah.
And then the one other thing is I'm kind of an advocate that we need more canines that are bomb-sniffing capability with the dogs, so that I could have them on a long leash out front. If people start to approach the facility, the dog hits on them faster, right, and that gives us a little upper edge about what's going on.
Kevin Malott, Erase.com, WILS. Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
We're back tomorrow, 6 p.m. Good night.